power on.
The following is a presentation of the Sovereign Technica podcast feed.
Ooh, the man of tomorrow is here, the Golden Stallion, Savzu, the rated R radio star, ready for another Sovereign Tech X. Been doing this on a weekly basis lately, and when it's set, when you put the X at the end, it can only mean one thing.
We're bringing it to you.
Woo, bringing it to you. Yeah, crotch chop. No,
woo.
Well, I'll certainly do that. Where are my
suck it.
Yeah, fuck, yes. Just gonna say, where are my DX Funkos? But I think they're in storage.
Oh, you packed them away.
I packed them away.
Oh, you packed away all your Funkos.
Yeah, pretty much.
Except for Skeletor.
Yeah, Skeletor. You know, our family, our little family diorama is there. Right there's Captain, played by Panthor.
Panthor. We got Evil Lynn over there.
Evil Lynn is right there. See.
Very nice.
Yeah, and there of course is Snake Mountain. So we're good to go.
Yeah, that's our whole life.
Yeah, that's us. I mean, that's really us, just villains. I got some Power Rangers ones still up there. But anyway, but you know, like, it's not like I packed them away out of shame. You know, you should never be, this is a thing, you should never be ashamed to wear, like, 90s wrestling gear. Modern wrestling gear, I don't know, but 90s wrestling t-shirts, hats, and all that shit, should never be ashamed of that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and you should never be ashamed to own toys as an adult.
I agree.
Of course you do. You own the most toys of anyone I know.
No, that's not true.
Okay, maybe Rob and Freebeard has more.
I was going to say, Rob's got me beat by a long shot. A long shot. And I mean, honestly, I really don't have that much, especially compared to, you know, lives previous of mine. I used to have a lot. But I will say, like, the coolest toys exist in the modern day. But they're based off of toys from, you know, 40 years ago or 30 or 20 years ago. Anyway, we're not going to get lost on all that. Why are we packing this stuff? Well, because we're going to go all Henry David Thoreau. I mean...
Wow, what a great segue.
Thank you. But go ahead, please.
We did go visit him recently.
We did. We visited old HDT there, and well, it's funny. I don't think I realized just how close we were to Walden Pond.
Yeah, it was not a far drive.
No, I mean
from New Hampshire, it's a little over an hour.
A little over an hour, and there you are. You know, and it's so, man, it's such a surreal thing to experience. Because,
yeah, agreed.
Like, it almost feels like an insult to the man, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, because, you know, we thought, oh, we must have missed a turn somewhere. This, because we're still, like, on a major highway. You get off for a little while, and there's kind of a state park around there. And then you get off, but then you end up getting back onto a major highway, and it's like, you know, this guy wanted to get away from civilization entirely. You know,
and it just built up around his area.
Yeah, and it feels like they put the worst of civilization as much as they could, like, right around him. And in the sense of worst as in, like, most advanced, not that the people are terrible or something. So...
I know what you mean.
The most egregious, how about that? And... But it's still, you know, you go there, the pond is a proper pond, I guess. I mean, it still feels like a lake to me, but whatever. I don't know what pond means anymore. But it was...
True. It could be a lake-sized body of water that even has fresh water flowing into it, and it's still called a pond, but...
Yeah, I don't get it.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's a mystery to me. But it's beautiful. But you, or myself, you, Rob, we all went...
Yeah.
To Walden Pond. And it's just one of those things. It's like, yeah, you got to do it. You know, it's something to see. Do you want to share with me at all what, like, I don't know if you want to explain who Henry David Thoreau is. I think most people do know. But at the very least, share what he means to you.
And, sure, yeah.
You know, his works.
So Henry David Thoreau is a famous author. I think mm-hmm. most people know that.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote famously... At least the two books that I read that really inspired me by him are Civil Disobedience
yeah,
and
huge.
Walden Pond.
Right.
So civil disobedience, I mean, it's been a long time since I've read these books, but essentially it's a story about him, like, refusing to pay taxes or something. I don't remember exactly, but he spent a few days in jail for disobeying politely what he felt was an unfair request. So civil disobedience is that sort of autobiography about that.
Yeah, I mean, and it gives a philosophy, right? Like, I mean, it's for me, it's kind of the classic text on noncompliance, which is part of the way. Yeah, in action. And it's such a solid read. But Walden, or did you
want to... It was great to read that because it really showed me that, you know, these aren't just principles, they are actions, and they require bravery, and you can do it, and you won't die.
Yeah, yeah, and it was being done, you know, over 100 years ago, you know, like when, when HDT was alive. But anyway, continue.
And Walden is a book about Henry going purposefully into a wilderness area to live, which is Walden Pond, the place that we visited. He had a little cabin there, and he didn't own the land. His friend owned it, who... What was his name?
Was that Emerson's land?
Oh, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Yeah, I believe you're right.
Okay.
So, it was owned by Emerson. They were good friends. But Henry David Thoreau went there to live for a couple years, and... The book Walden is basically just him writing his thoughts, meditations, impressions from gardening in the area and bathing in the lake and all of the nature that he saw while living there and just how peaceful it was.
Yeah.
And occasionally he would have visitors, but his cabin was really so small that there wasn't much room for guests.
Yeah, I think you read it, you read the book, and I mean, you know, one of the classic quotes from it is, you know, "I came here to die. And after 2 years, I found out I never really lived."
I don't think that's what that's the quote is. No, he said he wanted to know when he died that he had truly lived.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay. Right.
So that's what he achieved while he was living on Walden Pond, was that he was really living, like, really in touch with the source of life.
Yeah.
He was gathering his own food. He was gardening. He was surviving in the wild, you know, cutting his own wood. And it was, you know, such a powerful experience because it was something that civilization tries to remove people from more and more. That source of life that is nature. And he purposefully went straight into it.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think you realize until you go to it. You can read it. You know, I read it. I had to read Walden in high school and everything. You can read about it, but when you actually go there, and, you know, his cabin's not there anymore. There's a replica of his cabin that you can see. Replica, like, interior, exterior. I mean, and it's super small. It's a cabin and a woodshed behind it, you know?
And you can still see the foundations of these, the real building.
Yeah, you can go on the walk, and, you know, you walk along the pond and everything, and you can go and you see, and they show you the area where it was. The remains of, I guess, basically the chimney. But, I mean, this is a tiny fucking place.
Yeah, I mean, really small.
Yeah, like it puts some tiny homes I've seen to shame as far as how tiny it is.
Yeah, he basically had a little end table with a chair and a single wide bed, or even smaller than that, I imagine.
Yeah.
The fireplace was really the biggest feature in there.
Yeah. Well, and arguably in Massachusetts, the most important because, you know, winters are going to be hard. And he was staying there during the winter.
And the woodshed was almost as big as the house.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Which that makes sense, too.
Right. I mean, we didn't get to go into the visitor center. We were getting there kind of later in the day. So we didn't, you know, get that whole experience. But so you know, you mentioned what civil disobedience meant to you, you know, that book and what that showed for you. How about... What did the book Walden mean to you? And then after that, you know, like, what was this experience like for you, you know, actually going and seeing what that was like?
I just thought Walden was beautiful. I mean,
The book.
Obviously, this is, yes, the book. Mm-hmm. This is an experience that I have wanted to live my entire life. And, like, we are kind of, sort of moving in that direction.
Yes.
Obviously, we can't just jump right into it like he did, because that kind of requires a lot of money, and we don't have wealthy friends who just have a cabin on a piece of land that are like, yeah, go ahead, live in there for 2 years.
Right.
But I loved that he lived such a simple life and had the most, like, beautiful, peaceful experience while he was there. Mm-hmm. Like, he truly, if you just look up quotes from the book Walden, it's some of the most, like, inspirational and beautiful thoughts that any human has ever come up with.
Yes.
And it's generally about, like, being back in touch with nature and being in touch with the human spirit and how that connects to the wild. It's just a, you know, something that really made me feel alive when I read it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and so finally seeing it, finally being there, I mean, what did that do for you?
That's what made it so surreal, was that in my mind, Walden was this magical fairyland that I had just imagined was perfect and pristine. Mm-hmm. And when we went there, it was not far from it. I mean, the walkways are kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a sightseeing venture now, you know.
So, right.
There's a lot of modern accoutrement in the area.
But the land surrounding the cabin has been protected.
Yeah.
And I guess in part we have the eagles to thank for that.
Oh, Don Henley.
Yes, Don Henley.
Yeah. I mean, a guy I've always been so thankful, you know, to make ponytails fashionable. You know, boy. How long is that ponytail now, Don? Anyway, go ahead.
So seeing where the cabin was and how small it was and just the proximity of it to the pond and all the little areas that he enjoyed when he was living there. Like, there's a cove, and there's a little swampy area. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of imagine where his garden was and what it looked like when he was there, because there were fewer trees. So it was just, you know, really great for me to solidify those memories of reading the book Walden with the actual place.
Yeah.
And to get more of that connection, you know, it just made it feel more human and more real to me. Like, it wasn't a far-off dream. It's something that anybody can achieve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, for me, it was kind of the same. You know, I mean, civil disobedience, of course, just to say how I feel about it. Like I said, it is kind of the original manual on noncompliance, you know, and that as a strategy. And that's such a wonderful thing. Yes. Worth it on its own. You know, I think to call HDT, to call him an anarchist, I don't think is a stretch at all. But,
right.
You know, and then he kind of takes it all the way, in my opinion, in an almost egoist fashion with Walden. And is just like, you know, he's just deuces, bitches, and he's out, you know. And yeah, fortunately, he has Emerson with him. It's kind of apropos that we talk about Emerson, but we'll get into that later with a couple of the stories we have lined up for everybody here. But yeah, reading Walden, I mean, I had a while, especially after getting out of the military, where I was really into survivalism and self-sufficiency, like really into it. But I was into it, honestly, my whole life. Like, when you leave, I left New York City as a kid, and we moved upstate New York into the most backwoods that was really imaginable, at least for me. And you've actually seen the area.
It's mountainous. A lot of mountainous forest.
Woodsy. I mean, you didn't get to see the ravines on each side of where I grew up, or you know, where as a teenager more. But like, I mean, I was obsessed. Like, wow, there's running water here. There's all this, you know, all this stuff here. Even like fruits and all this stuff grows and whatever. Like, I could live in the backyard. You know, I mean, that was kind of. I mean, I'm a kid, but that's what I'm thinking, and.
I had the same thoughts growing up, too.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if that's related at all.
Could be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what comes first? You know, was it reading Walden, or was it, no, I had these proclivities this whole time that led me to reading Walden.
Exactly.
And, you know, and Walden was reading it done in such a, for lack of a better term, in such a pro manner. Like, it was really done. Somebody really pulled this off. Granted, it was over 100 years ago. And, you know, is it possible to do these things so much now? You know, you got to pay land taxes more or less almost wherever you are. I mean, I know there's countries where there aren't exactly land taxes, but you run into all kinds of problems. Regardless.
America's not one of those.
Yeah, no. Regardless, it, you know, going to see it finally, like, real same, it solidified it for me. And just again, experiencing how small the area was that he lived in. Because I always kind of imagine, like, when you read Walden, there's a lot of walking. You know, and I always kind of imagined that he kind of walked back and forth in his house. But there's no way he did that. Like, it was so tiny.
He might have been able to pace a little bit.
Yeah. But not much.
He could have walked to town, which was a couple miles down the trail.
Yeah, right. It was shocking, you know, really to see that, to see just how small it was. I'm not surprised. I agree with you. It is effectively a paradise. I mean, I think New England is the most beautiful, New England in general, not just New Hampshire, but New England in general is just the most beautiful place on earth. And he got a spot that you know, got it all as far as what makes it that beauty. It's really something. And just to stand, like, the most powerful thing was to stand where his house originally was and just look what he must have seen out of his front door. And that view is absolutely inspiring. It was insane to see people in November swimming.
Yeah, that was another weird thing. There was like some serious swimming training going on while we were there.
Yeah, some polar plunges. I don't know.
They were wearing the wetsuits.
Yeah,
and they had floaties that they were carrying around with
them.
That
was weird. It kind of made me wonder if HDT was doing some polar plunges himself, and that gave him some of his inspiration. But it is powerful to be somewhere where somebody really did it for an extended period of time. And it worked. And you can just, you can picture it. You really can get it. Like, everything he was saying in Walden, you really get it when you're there. I think it's worthwhile for anybody to go and, you know, to go and see. And partly because this was, I think a lot of times when we imagine people doing this sort of survivalism stuff or self-sufficiency stuff or whatever, to be conventional about it, I think you kind of expect them to be, how to put it? I'm trying to think of how to put this.
Crazy?
And I don't know about crazy, but a little, I want to say bushwhacker, but that's, I don't want to be insulting to any, I have Australian audience members, and I don't mean that as any kind of insult. Basically, what I'm trying to get at is, Henry David Thoreau was a gentleman's gentleman. And
yes, he lived in society for his whole life, basically.
Right. He was a quote-unquote proper gentleman. And I'm not necessarily saying that to be like to hold him up in, you know, in any kind of grand way. Because, I mean, I consider myself a savage. But he was a gentleman and he did this. As to where I think a lot of times you think of people who are outside picking their asses. You know what I mean? That do this sort of thing. Or crazy might even be the best word. And actually, I know of libertarians and anarchists who I would straight up happily call them crazy to their face, who did this sort of thing. And
well, there's degrees of crazy. I guess I just meant, you know, somebody who does this is maybe, you know, out of touch with social norms and conventions.
Yeah.
And that makes them strange. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because I think there's degrees of what could be considered crazy that are actually beneficial.
Right.
But, you know, just somebody who's a little more on the fringes and maybe rough and tough and unpolished, you know?
Yeah, unpolished. Which, not to say there's anything great about polish. This is such a hard thing to discuss because, like, I don't want to say rednecks because that's not true. And fuck insulting Southern people. That's just, that's.
Oh, you don't have to be Southern to be a redneck.
No. Well, that's for damn sure. Okay. But anyway, I'm just saying that, like, he was an intellectual that went out there to do this. And I know there are plenty who are and who do it today. And you can even fuck amazingly. You can read their blogs. You can, you know, whatever. And all of that is so wonderful. I'm just saying somebody, it's very different.
He didn't have a lot of outdoorsy experience. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And again, just because he was very, very sane, you know, and it's just, I feel like it's a lot more powerful coming from him. I think that's the idea. The only way I could contrast it would be, and this is just kind of an analogy, okay, would be like Scott Hahn. Scott Hahn is this guy who was Christian. You know, he was a Protestant, and he ended up converting to Catholicism. Now, when you read Scott Hahn's books on Catholicism, they're phenomenal. They're great. Why? Because he wasn't a Catholic, you know, but he's clearly an intelligent guy, as to where when you read books by a lot of Catholics, it's all kind of, but coming from him, it means so much more. And that's what I think I'm trying to get at, is coming from Henry David Thoreau, it's just all the more powerful because this wasn't his life. And it wasn't even like necessarily originally his dream. He just came from a different, and it's such an awakening for him.
And he purposely left behind civilization.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because there are Native Americans that lived in the area, and you can see those signs around if you go to visit the site.
Yes.
But what's really outstanding about Henry David Thoreau is that he was a member of society. He was part of civilization.
Right.
Well-documented, and he purposely decided he wanted to get away from that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's all the more powerful. And when you see it and you get it, why it struck him so much, it's amazing. And it brings the text alive. It really does. So, beyond that, I mean, you would say this is something like we're working towards getting in that direction.
I would like to think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Totally. So, you know, I hope I was trying to explain like the contrasting characters to Henry David Thoreau, and like, don't think I'm insulting people who engage in self-sufficiency. No, that's our fucking goal as well. Like we're with you. Okay.
Yeah. I'd love to spend all day gardening. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. That was okay. And this is the last point I want to bring up is like his house is so small. So, while granted, it would actually be fairly easy to keep a Kindle and have it charged all the time and have a massive library of books on there, because I already have that. But at the same time, you know, you do kind of want to get away from it more. And that's the one thing where I don't know how, if you could have such a small space, because the books that I would need, you know, around me, like, it just wouldn't allow for a small house like that. You know, at the time, maybe there weren't that many books and it didn't matter to Henry David Thoreau. Or he had already read them all and memorized them so well because he existed at a time where there was less distraction. I don't know. But for me, like, you know, there'd easily be a whole wall of books. And those are just the reference books. That's not even the fun stuff.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Knowledge is one of the most important possessions that you can possibly have in your vicinity.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say that you can, like, own a thing.
Right.
You can have books in your possession.
Yeah.
And once you read them, you know, you kind of own that knowledge in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
You can still spread it to other people, give the books away or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's good to have them on hand to reference.
Right.
Which is why we need, in addition to our tiny cabin, a giant library next door.
Yeah, it's like, no, we just live here, this shitty little place. but that veritable mausoleum of
it's a castle
of books.
We
yeah,
just have our books live in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's for the books. We don't matter. Those are what matter. Yeah, I mean, it's great because, you know, books don't need batteries, so, you know, they can last forever, or at least as long as the pages hold up. So yeah, that's the one thing. That's the one critique I have is like, oh, no, there's not enough room in a house like that for books. Otherwise, HDT, I'm with you, man. Like, I could pull that off, too, I think. Or you and I could, certainly.
But I think part of his experiment was he was going there and recording his own thoughts, not necessarily, like, trying to learn the body of knowledge that people have put into the world.
Fair.
He wanted to learn the body of knowledge that existed outside.
Right. Now, you know, actually, okay, I know I said we were going to wrap this up, but I want to take a little side stroll on this.
Oh, all right.
All right. Yes. So you and I mean, we're fairly avid hikers, you know, as in we do it whenever we can and we
multiple
do it hard.
Times a summer. Yeah.
Yes. You know, and so even if like there's times where we run out of time or whatever, it's not because of inability. We have all the ability in the world. And, you know, it's just always a matter of time or whatever. But we go and do it and we do it hard. And like, you know, whether we're going to Mount Katahdin and camping out for days, you know, whatever. I mean, again, we do this the hardcore way.
Yeah. Or there's local state parks where we do like 4 mile hikes and,
right.
you know, going up that last little bit up to the top of the mountain is mm-hmm. the hardest part. But,
oh yeah,
you know, it's worthwhile.
Yeah. I mean, we did Mount Langdon. We stayed there for, what, a couple days? Or was that, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yep, yep.
We've done all, yeah, we do this stuff hardcore. So, anyway.
We live in the Appalachians.
Right, right. And so, you know, we'll get to these mountains. We'll get to the top. And sometimes we'll even see, like, little odd structures or whatever. Who knows who built them or did what. You know, I'm not saying that it's anything, like, ancient alien kind of horseshit. But, you know, or we'll just get to the top of the mountain and we'll be like, yeah, we could just, you know, build a little structure and we'll just live up here, you know? And it's like, okay, well, we can't bring the library. We can't bring the books with us, you know, up to these heights, even though we'd love to just live there, you know, just live at the, if not the top of the mountain, at least somewhere along the trail of the mountain.
That's quitter talk.
Well, right. yeah.
Saying we can't bring him up there.
Well, I mean, we could, but like, so a thought that I always have is, okay, so our ancient ancestors, as in humans, you know, lived like that. I'm sure many of them lived in the mountains. I mean, we know this. And, you know, it's like, okay, so how do you, living like that, say, how do you, because I think you can, I guess the point I'm getting at, you can read the Book of Nature. We've talked about this on our hikes at times, okay? And like, how do you get to understand like the grander truths of existence, you know, with, say, without books, and you're just living like on a mountaintop or whatever. Now, granted, you know, Henry David Thoreau obviously was doing that. Like, his works were, you know, like you said, he's writing down his thoughts, okay, and his experiences and what comes to him. And there was a lot of beautiful things, clearly, that came to him based on his writings. And these are truths he was gleaning, clearly not from having a large library, but truths he was gleaning from just his experience and what he was seeing.
His observations.
His observations, yes.
Yeah, he was a keen observer.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really the trick to learning and understanding these grander truths of nature,
right.
is just to shut up and pay attention.
Right, right. So, yeah, and that's it. Like, is, you know, you say, because I thought you raised a great point, that, okay, he wasn't going there, you know, to with books and everything, and that was on purpose and being an observer. And that's the thing, is I really think you can come to understand, really, the truths of the entire universe just from, like, you know, being there, peaceful, nothing taking away your attention, and just being a keen observer.
Right, and not allowing any thoughts to interfere with your observations.
Right, right. Because, you know, I think we think that, oh, without computers and without books and without this and without that, how the hell do we learn anything? You know, how do we understand anything? You know, we're always building on the shoulders of giants, which is somewhat true, for sure. But really, I think with just observation and what I would really chalk up to tranquility, I think you can figure it. I imagine you can figure it all out. And part of the reason I bring this up is that I think really throughout all of human history, there have always been Henry David Thoreau's who just like, no, give me the fuck away from this, you know, at least from the Neolithic on, you know, whenever like civilization started to like, you know, the city of Uruk or who knows what, or Göbekli Tepe, you know, these things start getting built and they're just like, nah, I'm out. Like, this is getting crazy. And I think they, you like, even the you know, matters of physics, you know, stuff that, that we think only Newton figured out or whatever, I think that people could actually figure out with, again, keen observation and just that tranquility. And obviously they'd be accessing, or I would say, obviously they'd be accessing, shall we say, higher frequencies of existence as well.
Yeah, I think a key part of that tranquility that you keep mentioning is, you know, achieving a meditative state
yes.
in a way.
Yes.
Feeling that safety, security, and peace and relaxation that mm-hmm. gets you to that meditative state where you are sort of an open book in a way.
Yeah.
Where you're just taking in all of these experiences.
Yeah.
And kind of filtering them through your consciousness.
Right. Right. And you're reading the book of nature.
Like, yes.
Straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a powerful thing. And it's something I left Walden with an incredible sense of envy. You know, just that, like, wow, you know, you got to do this. And I know there's plenty of times where you and I are just like we're slowly moving in that direction of self-sufficiency and so many other things. But like, there's so many times where we just say to each other, like, no, let you know, we'll be hiking, like I was saying, mm-hmm. and we're just like, no, we'll just stop right here. And what we've got is what we've got, and that's it. No one sees us again.
This is where the cabin goes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's one of the most beautiful things that you also feel that, you know, and you speak up about it even before I will. And, it's phenomenal.
It's really wonderful that we align on those goals.
Yes. Yeah.
And those desires to get away from what is could be considered a toxic civilization.
Right. Right. And again, I think it strikes all the harder when, you know, we can list off all the things of modernity that drive us nuts and just make us want to get away.
Oh, yeah. It's the easiest thing to do.
Right. But then it's the most amazing thing to think, wait a minute, somebody before all of this shit was invented felt this way too?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something in that. And we're not going to lay out the answer here. I'm just saying that there's something in that of, you know, why have we seemingly always felt this way?
I have got one word.
Give it to me.
Government.
Oh, whoa, there it is. Perhaps the better word, freedom. That's the other side of the coin, right?
They're both sides of the same coin.
Yeah, yeah. Which one do you get to land on?
Yeah. Well, we did not land on the freedom side.
No. No, heavens no. So, anyway, we're trying.
Yeah, yeah. I just think back to books that I've read about, like, even, you know, Switzerland in the 1000s. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they still had a lot of problems with government.
Yeah.
Like, even before that, there were, like, feudal lords and yeah. tax collectors. It's just, it's been this way ever since the early beginnings of humanity
right.
Forming civilization.
Right.
And it's something that people constantly feel the need to fight against or rebel against or mm-hmm. get away from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no, it's just about agency and control of your own life.
Right.
And that freedom that you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's just amazing to think that this guy was completely like Massachusetts surrounds this little pond entirely.
Yeah,
there's the worst, like, of government.
Freeways going all around it.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So, okay. Fascinating conversation. And, you know, I did a great segue earlier, I think. Or did I? That's all right.
You did do a great segue earlier.
But we're going to run right into this. And, you know, speaking of, this is actually the antithesis of getting away from people. A story we want to talk about is actually almost the opposite.
You can't get away.
You really can't get away. And today, with social media, holy shit. So, why don't we get into our first story? And these are both very fresh. And this one's from Vox, from Vox.com, by Angel Martinez. So, and it's from November 17th, 2023. Why do we keep tabs on people we can't stand? how to stop checking on your ex and everyone else you love to hate on social media. So, okay, before we start reading this story, first off, folks, if you think, oh, wow, oh, a story about how social media is bad. No, that's actually not the direction I'm going to go on this one. I have whole other things I want to say about it.
Wow, what a twist.
Yeah, and I want to hear what you have to say about it as well, Ellen. But let me ask you this. Do you ever, like, and if you don't want to admit it, that's okay. But do you ever check on your exes or, like, past people from your life on social media? Is this something
you do? I have kind of a unique approach when it comes to social media, and I think people recognize this. Like, I didn't even have social media for a long time until we, you know, put our Instagrams up recently.
Yeah, which is something we both decided to do, because we were both off of social media at that point. Yeah.
Yep, and I've gone through cycles of this over the years where I'll have a social media account for like 2 or 3 years, and then I'm like, I don't want to deal with this anymore, and I just delete it.
Yeah.
And then I'll, you know, create another one a couple years later. And so the cycle continues. But anyway, to answer your question, do I keep tabs on any of my exes or people that I hate? And the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Except one person. And that is the first person that I ever dated.
Oh.
And there's specific reasons why I do. And part of that has to do with this person was like very obsessive and very threatening and kind of stalked me.
So you're doing it as self-defense.
Yeah, so...
Very different, yeah.
After we read the article, I think it'll make more sense.
Okay.
But it's not actually that different from what some other people describe. At least the internal experience, for me,
right,
is the same as what other people experience when they do this action.
Right.
But I justified, you know, checking in on this person's social media activity because I thought I was keeping myself safe.
Yes.
Right. By making sure that they were not succeeding.
Yeah.
And that they were not in the area that I am.
Right.
So I kind of justified it that way. But at the same time, it also, the first thing I said, not succeeding, like that doesn't exactly have anything to do with me being safe. That's more just like me hating them because they're a terrible person.
Right.
They're an abusive person.
Yeah.
So I felt better just knowing, like, they're far away from me.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't do this. There were times in my life where, like, yes, I had a bad breakup with someone, or yes, I had a falling out with someone who was a friend. And I would check in on them a couple times over the following weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But every time it just made me feel so bad. You know, it was like reopening the wounds. And I had to come to the decision on my own, like, do I want this person in my life or do I not? And if the answer is no, then I need to just cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not beneficial. And if I really feel like I want to move beyond this, then I have to literally move on by spending my time doing productive things instead of wallowing in my self-pity. So... Yeah, I really do not practice this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And like that person I mentioned that I did check in on, I haven't done that in years.
Yeah, right.
In fact, after I read this article, I did check in on them and I re-experienced that feeling of like, oh, this is terrible. Why did I do this?
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. So, well, again, and I think you are not in the norm on your social media use. So,
right.
which you laid out at the beginning. Exactly. So that's important to point out. I'd like to think that I am not the norm either, because in general, I hate social media. The odd part with me is that I am terribly good at social media. And I don't mean necessarily for myself, even though I've always had people say, it's like, yeah, your post, I couldn't like it. I couldn't comment on it because I couldn't have anybody see me do it. But man, you were so right. You know, I've had those experiences so many times, right? But I mean, I get paid by some people to handle social media accounts, and these are very successful social media accounts.
Okay, but do you do this?
Well, let me, I'm just explaining that, like, first off, you know, okay, you know, that I'm the odd man out as well, as far as social media goes, even though, again, I am frighteningly good at it, okay? Do I do this? No. You know, do I keep tabs on people we can't stand? Do I keep checking on exes and all of this? Nope. I have no idea what these people in my past are doing. I don't even know what my family's doing. I have no, like, I just don't know. I don't look, and I don't really care. Like, there's moments where I've brought up, it's like, oh, I wonder what this person, you know, but I, at the end of the day, I don't have the time, and I don't really care, you know?
What's the thought process behind that? Do you really just, like, you just don't care anymore? You're completely divested?
Yeah, kind of. But, you know, I think why that happens for me, you know, as far as family goes, you know what? I think this is true for just about everybody. You know, like, I've never blocked exes. They've blocked me, I think. I don't exactly know. But a few things. Like, one is, I feel like, now, in our relationship, this is actually one of the first ones where I have not felt this. I feel like in most of my relationships, it's always about someone needing something from me. You know, like, all the time. And, like, with my family, they just, it was, everything was, oh, could you do this for me? Could you do this for me? Could you do this for me? And it just drives me up a fucking wall.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's part of the reason I really don't care to ever look or whatever, because I think in my mind, ultimately, I'm just thinking, like, well, they're probably doing terrible. And also, you know, I don't necessarily want to see that. And because conversely is I know everybody says this, but no, really, I have a huge heart and I'm incredibly empathetic and I really care. And I will, you know, turn myself off, as I say, to do things, you know, for others, even though inside I'm like completely enraged, you know, that I'm doing this for this person. But I just care and I just don't want to, it's such a weird thing.
You just
thing.
Can't say no to people.
Yeah. I mean, and the funny thing is actually this fits so perfectly with what we were just talking about with Henry David Thoreau. Yeah. I think in my mind, part of my programming is that if I get them if I make them happy, let's just put it that way. If I make them happy, they'll leave me alone. And that's all I want. I just want to be left alone. Like, just let me do my shit. Just leave me alone. And that's my thought process. And so I think if I start to, in any way whatsoever, you know, start to look into social media in the past or whatever, they're not going to leave me alone. And yeah, that's kind of what comes up for me. And it's like, not that my value in anyone is what they do for me. It's, again, my concern is I have the fear that everybody just wants something from me.
Yeah, and it's not a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah, no. No, it's all take. You know, no give. Even though that's a false dichotomy, but regardless, just for conventional conversation, you know, that's how it works for me. So, yeah, I don't look into these people at all, you know? Yeah, I could spend a ton of time talking about why, but there's no real point to that. This just doesn't matter. Like, the bullies in high school, I don't care, you know, which we'll talk about in this story. What do you got?
Yeah, yeah. So I was just going to say, like, so you don't feel like these people in your past ever really cared about what you wanted, which is why you're not interested in checking in on them.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that kind of hits it. I mean, like, this article will talk about, like, you know, oh, looking in on how are the bullies doing, you know, that you dealt with in high school or whatever. I mean, the one thing, you know, I always wish, granted, I wish public school would just go away entirely.
Yeah, right.
Okay. For one, but for two, if you are going to public school, and I've said this I've been saying this forever. I wish the best thing that one of the best things parents can say to their children is, listen, none of these people are going to matter to you once you graduate.
And they don't. They don't matter.
But you don't know that when you're there. When you're in high school, they're the most important people in your life because they're all the judges, you know?
But the best thing that you experience when you leave high school is that they really don't matter. If you don't allow them to matter, then they just don't.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and this speaks to, I guess this is one other part I want to get out before we break into the story, you know, that happens for me, is, you know, why does somebody become an ex? Why do people separate? And it doesn't have to be romantic relationships. It could just be friendships. It's usually because you're both evolving in different directions.
Or someone's evolving and the other person's not.
And the other's not. Right. And the other's stagnant. That's another possibility. Okay. So, but that's the thing. For me, when I'm evolving, like I don't know if I said this earlier, but I've brought this up a ton of times. You know, I feel like I've lived 4 or 5 lives.
Yeah, same.
Okay. And, you know, when I've reached the next stage of evolution, honestly, I'm going for a clean break. You know, like I'm evolved. I'm, you know, and moved on. And I'm not saying I'm like a higher being. I'm just saying I've evolved, you know, in a different direction. I've grown in a different direction. Let's put it that way. And so I can't be here. Right. What's the old saying? I can't think of it now. That like the bird can't really learn to fly in its own nest or something like that.
Yeah. You have to change your environment in order to continue growing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, for me, like when I'm at the next level, I'm out, you know, and it's okay. Like it doesn't have to be like, I never block anybody because I don't care. They can't do anything to me. You know, I'm elsewhere and I'm, you know, moved on in so many ways. I don't know if that sounds asshole-ish or not. It's certainly not meant to be. It's just, it's two people moving in different directions. So.
Well, I'm very glad that you've been fortunate enough to not need to block anyone in your life.
Yeah, well, like you said, you had to deal with self-defense. You had to deal with other things. I mean, I guess I'm fortunate in those ways.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, there are people, I mean, not just in my past, but in anybody's lives, you know, that might wish you harm or want to continue abusing you from afar.
Yeah.
And social media is like the only way they can do that if you're not in physical contact.
Yeah, that's fair. And honestly, actually, you know, the other point I should bring up, I probably would have had to have blocked people when I was younger, but social media didn't exist at the time. The internet barely existed at the time. So it was just a different time.
Right.
But at that point, yeah, I can think of people that, oh yeah, I would have had to block them. You know, like, anyway, so, all right, let's actually get to the story here. Again, why do we keep tabs on people we can't stand? I think there's some interesting things to pull out of this. So I'll start reading it. In the early days of the internet, a hater was the worst thing you could be. Spite and sarcasm had no place in a sea of people who watched videos of babies laughing or tended to their virtual farms. Thankfully, as time passed, we as a society have learned to stop lying to ourselves. No one is ever truly out of sight and out of mind today, which is why we shamelessly send bad posts of people we don't like to our friends or have entire group chats dedicated to gathering receipts. Over 70,000 people have uploaded their confessions on TikTok to the tune of the catchy Haters Anthem because, as the song itself says, we love the way it feels to be a hater. You, too, might find yourself looking at social media feeds of people you don't like and getting joy out of the experience. It's a common habit, an often harmless way to let off some steam. But continually hate-stalking others' accounts can keep us trapped in a cycle of unproductive negativity. So I'm going to stop here for a second. And that's the concept that's really being talked about here is this hate-stalking. Okay. That, like, you're doing it, you're looking at them, like, kind of out of spite, or you're interacting out of some degree of spite. You know, not because you like the person. You know, like, yeah, ooh, The Rock, we love you, great. You know, it's the exact opposite. Okay. Do you have any quick thoughts on this?
Yeah, I really appreciate what the author is saying here. There was an era in internet history where being a hater was, you know, an insult to call someone a hater. It's like, you shouldn't be a hater.
Right.
But then, you know, people realized, oh, we all actually hate things, which is a normal human emotion.
Aha!
And kind of a healthy one because the great haters are also the great lovers. You know, there has to be this sort of balance. This isn't an original saying. I'm not making this up.
No, I know, but all right, but here's what, let me just say, what is original? We didn't pre-discuss what we wanted to say about the story before we recorded. And I'm just loving what you're laying down. Please continue.
Thank you. Well, I'm just saying that the author had, you know, that was a very astute observation that they made. And I really appreciate them saying that it's okay to hate certain things about certain people. Yeah, it is normal for people to do that. But I don't think that it's necessarily a healthy way to let off steam. And certainly I don't think it's a healthy behavior to just look at accounts of people that you dislike and wish ill on them.
Yeah, we could almost come up with the term hate scrolling, you know, kind of like doom scrolling, but instead it's like hate scrolling. And if you're doing that, okay, yeah, if that is the entirety of your existence on Instagram or TikTok, you know, certainly we could run, that might be running into problems. But I want to take a second here as well, just to kind of expand or to extrapolate a bit on, or unpack a bit on what you're saying. So we have, and I've brought this up many times, as humans, we have a problem. And if you can hear some scratching, that's our
studio cat,
that's the
captain.
Studio cat captain. He's exerting his dominance.
And he's marking his territory.
Over the wood. And so we have this real problem where when I say an emotion like fear or love or hate to you, any one of those words can mean 10 billion different things, right? Like love can be the love that exists between friends, you know, where, yes, I love you. I love that you're part of my, you know, we're on each other's journey. We're, you know, and all this stuff. Or love can be something romantic, sexual, whatever, you know, and those are different things. And those are different expressions of love, but we use the same word. Right? Like, we still just use love most of the time. And we
If you're being lazy.
Yeah, right. I mean, or then certainly online, you know, like, because you're limited to however many characters, whatever you're typing out. So, you know, nuance is not, nuance and the internet do not go hand in hand. So, you know, the word hate, like, you know, I recently did that episode about Israel and Hamas, you know, and I mentioned how, like, hate, just having hate doesn't get you anywhere. That is a very different kind of hate than, you know, a personal distaste or distrust or other things with another human being. Like, these are complete, like, there are different levels of hate, right? And when we say hate, it can be helpful to kind of, you know, to define that a bit. Okay.
Yeah. And especially with the examples that the author was giving at the beginning, there's this sort of, like, righteous indignity that people are speaking out against, you know, where they're like collecting lists of receipts, like, this person owes me this much money. And then another person chimes in, oh yeah, they gypped me too. They still owe me this much money.
Yeah.
Like, I've had that experience too, where you call out somebody publicly saying they did this bad thing and I'm really upset about it.
Right.
And you should be aware, if you're going to be friends with this person or have them in your life in any capacity, they are going to do X, Y, and Z. Because this is their pattern. And everybody else can chime in the comments saying, yeah, they did the same thing to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, it feels good when that happens because there's a sense of justice in the world.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not always the case, as we'll see in the story.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Like, let's keep going. I just wanted to make it clear, like, there are many different types of hate. And, you know, there's some that I can't get behind it all. There's others. Well, let's keep reading.
Right.
So, let's see. Here we go. Of course, here we go. Okay, since prehistoric times, humans have thrived on seeking out and obtaining information about the world around us, especially as it pertains to other people. It doesn't matter whether we love or hate them. These emotions activate some of the same circuits in the brain and consequently release the same rush of rewarding feelings. Often we're drawn to dislike those who we feel violate social norms, like that annoying micro-influencer who overshares every single detail of their deep-seated trauma, because we're intrigued by why and how they're able to do what they do. These reasons could be even more complicated and varied if we personally know if we personally know those, we keep tabs on. Of course, this kind of social media lurking is completely different from actual behaviors of criminal stalking and acts of hate. And see, this is where they're breaking it down a little bit. Like, we're not talking about criminal acts, and we're not talking about acts of hate, as in where you go and kill the person because they're whatever.
Well, that would be criminal acts.
Yeah, well, that would be criminal. Yeah, right, exactly.
So this isn't anything that's aggressing against anyone. It's,
no.
It's just a personal experience.
Right. It's something that is just kind of fueling sort of your personal anger, perhaps, things like this. Okay. Yeah. It's a very inward experience. So reading on, there's a serious distinction between quietly sending a friend someone's weird Instagram story and actually bullying and harassment, which should never be condoned. But no matter how much harmless this, or no matter how harmless this common version of social media stalking could seem at the onset, it can still be detrimental. When we're feeling particularly down in the dumps, it's hard to see what we're looking at is just a deluge of highly curated information that may not serve a better interest to engage with. The feeling of social comparison that follows forces us to keep up with appearances and overcompensate for what we lack. Despite these real effects, it can be hard to admit that it's a problem that needs to be addressed, mostly because of how easy it is to hide. Quote, think about other behaviors like smoking, drinking alcohol, or compulsive shopping. There are often witnesses to this, or a trail of evidence which makes us feel more accountable to other people, end quote, explained Georgina Sturmer, an integrative counselor who has worked with women struggling with addiction. Quote, hate stalking can be done in private without fear of being caught or questioned, making it much easier for us to go down a rabbit hole, end quote. As a result, we tend to go down these spirals alone and leave social media stalking sessions feeling ashamed or embarrassed, wondering how we got so invested in others' digital lives in the first place. It's a complicated behavior that brings up a lot of conflicting emotions. With that in mind, the name of some of the people interviewed for this article have been changed to protect their identities. Anyway, do you have comments you want to make on any of that?
Yeah, I just think that she's absolutely right. I mean,
sure.
I think there is probably a portion of the, you know, the people interviewed that are looking at the lives of people that used to bully them or their exes online,
mm-hmm.
and they're not experiencing that sense of, like, justice in the world. And, you know, where, like, they want the other person to fail or to suffer or whatever. And they're not, because it's social media and people curate their posts to make it look like their lives are great and wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is a big problem that society has overall, is it has no understanding of what reality is, of what the reality is. You know.
Well, it's certainly not online.
Yeah, no. And I mean, the funny thing is, a lot of what's being described here, this hate stalking, this is not a new thing. This is not. I mean, this was done. People did this reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, reading George Gracie's column or whatever, right? Like, people would do this. How did reality television become a thing? It became a thing because, in my opinion, the reason why it's so popular is because it makes a lot of people who maybe don't feel so good about themselves or maybe on a, conventionally speaking, different social strata, it gave them something to make fun of. It gave them something to say, well, fuck, at least I'm not that.
Right.
You know, and it allowed them to do, you know, all kind with all the what these ridiculous people were doing, and 10 times better if it's celebrities being asshats, which I mean they are anyway, but you know, being asshats on TV, being ridiculous, and you get to say, well, fuck, my life sucks, but at least I'm not that stupid.
Yeah, you know? Can make fun of their, like, oh, I'm gonna spend $1 million on a marble countertop. Like, of course everybody wants to laugh at that because that's ridiculous.
Right.
That's an insane amount of money.
Sure, or even that. Yeah. What, you know, whatever it is, or Big Brother, you know, like that show Big Brother, or what, any of this stuff can be, it can make you feel better about yourself. The problem becomes, you know, and we'll keep reading the story, of course, you know, I think a lot of people are probably picking it up. The problem is, again, like Georgina mentioned, addiction. The problem is when you just spend all your life watching reality TV shows to feel better about yourself, or in this case, hate scrolling, you know, or hate stalking, and you don't go on living your own life. That's the issue, or that's a major part of the issue.
Yeah, and it really can become psychologically addicting. And you would think, Why would somebody want to become addicted to, or not necessarily want to become addicted to, but why would somebody become addicted to a behavior that makes them feel bad? And that's a really interesting question. It's one that psychologists continue to investigate.
Sure.
Like, it's a behavioral pattern that brings people comfort. It's something that they know.
Yeah.
And just reading the posts of people that they dislike, at least they're comforted in knowing, like, all right, I have all of the information on this person.
Yes.
Even if it makes them feel terrible.
Yeah.
Which, like, some of these people describe, they really feel like shit after doing this.
Sure. But, I mean, when it's happening, like, it's probably, you know, again, akin to many addictions. You're getting dopamine hits.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting all these things. So, let's keep reading. Recognizing the behavior and understanding what's driving it. Like any other addictive behavior, hate stalking can be a habit we develop to address an unmet need. Quote, it's easy to go online in an attempt to tackle underlying feelings of loneliness or boredom. Once we're there, social media contains built-in features that keep us on the hook, end quote, Sturmer said. Stallion, breaking in for a second on that. Yeah, we know that Facebook or Meta, you know, pick the company. They literally hire the same behavioral marketers and scientists that work with casinos, you know, to make sure you do get hooked. That's a fact. Reading on. When we acknowledge that our social media lurking can hinder our happiness, it's important to get to the root of this behavior. Take Annie, who still keeps tabs on the former bullies who made her high school life a living hell. Quote, I've kept up with their lives for so long to see if they've peaked in high school, end quote. The 29-year-old creative told me in an interview. Quote, sadly, hate stalking has only made me more self-conscious, especially when I see a former bully thriving. I tend to talk to myself from a place of shame whenever I don't achieve something like them, end quote. Sometimes there can be an element of seeking karmic justice, of wanting to know whether someone is suffering as punishment for hurting us in the past. Take Rika's former coworker, who Rika said was so threatened by her that she tried to derail her career. Quote, this person moved to another company, and I started hate stalking to see if she would make something of herself after leaving, end quote. The 42-year-old salesperson shared, quote, I just didn't want to believe that she could ruin my career and not face any consequences. I'd like to think that the universe is fair, end quote. The universe is not fair, and as I always say, that's a good thing. Because if it were fair, the bad things that happened to you, you deserved. So always revel in the fact that the universe is not fair. But regardless, people do it for a sense of karma. Certainly that's interesting. Let's keep reading some of these examples. Coming to terms with our reasons for lurking will require asking and answering some pretty uncomfortable questions. Quote, examples of this could include, what are you seeking in this encounter? Are you going to this person's account to torture yourself? Is this a manifestation of feelings of loneliness or anger or envy? Or are we curious what other people are doing without us? End quote, said Jamie Krems, a social psychologist and professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. Consider, too, the role social media may have previously played in your relationship with this person. Maybe you were, quote unquote, liking and commenting on their posts, or you your catch-up lunches or birthday parties were featured on their feeds a lot. These interactions may have brought the distinct kind of validation that serves as online currency, which might be a reason why we keep coming back to some people's accounts. Anything to say on all of this, Ellen?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on what you said about the universe not being fair.
Sure.
And this article saying that people are looking for some sense of karmic justice. I think it's interesting that they use the word karmic justice, because if you really believe in karma and reincarnation, which is kind of part of the same package.
Yeah, they're kissing cousins.
So the idea is that, like, the universe is fair in the sense that if you are a reincarnated being, you kind of have this choice of what challenges you get to face in the next life to learn specific lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're facing a lot of challenges in life, you chose those challenges for yourself in a, you know, a previous, like, pre-life state, so that you could learn the lessons from those challenges.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
so in that sense, it's not necessarily a matter of justice or right and wrong. It's more so like, I want to learn this, so I'm going to face this. Now, I'm not saying that these people consciously chose to face this, or that I necessarily even believe that. I'm just saying that there might be, you know, something more than just, like, karmic justice out there. It's a matter of, like, what is it that you need to learn from this experience? And, like the psychologist was saying, you know, are you doing this to torture yourself? Well, some people are going to be stuck in that torture cycle until they learn the lesson, like, I don't need to feel this way every day. Right. I can get out of this torture cycle by just learning to move on or let go or spend my time doing something more beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like what you're saying. You know, I could see where it could be helpful to look at an ex's account. And honestly, it could be therapeutic because, you know, you can look at it and then you can kind of, you know, now that you're separated, say, from the relationship, and you can analyze to some degree, as much as the reality exists online, which it barely does, but you know, you could try and analyze, okay, you know, psychoanalyze, what did I do? Why did I fall into this trap?
Yes.
You know, why did I, you know, like yours, which is, you know, I think what you were saying, or part of what you were saying. And so, you know, that can be a very helpful thing.
It is.
I think doing it, looking for some kind of justice, justice is a funny term. I think karma is a very odd thing. And you're right that in the direct meaning of karma, reincarnation is a part of that. Like they're similar, Buddhist or, you know, there's other Southeast Asian, mythologies that include it.
Yeah, I think most people get the implication that, like, whatever your karma is in this life, that's what you're reincarnated into in the next life.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, but there's problems in that. Because, like, if justice actually existed in the universe as a, wow, printer's going. Anyway, the printer's not happy about this. If justice existed in the universe, we wouldn't need police. We don't need police anyway, but we don't need police because there's justice in the universe. It's just, you know, we go for these false senses of justice, which government and, you know, authorities give us. Again, it's false.
Right, okay. Because sometimes justice takes longer than a single lifetime to achieve, is kind of this karmic idea.
Yeah, I I'm not even necessarily, and this is probably going to shock some people who don't listen to Patreon Q&As for Sovereign Technica, but I'm not even wholly against the concept of reincarnation. I mean, there's excellent scientific evidence that reincarnation is a real thing, okay? But the idea that somehow we, you know, that reincarnation is part of a grand scheme of justice, of reward and punishment, I don't really buy that. You know, like that I don't see that as a feature of existence.
Yeah, and it's really interesting if you do more research into the idea of karma and reincarnation. Like, a lot of reincarnation doesn't have to do with justice or right and wrong. It has to do with what do you want for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you get to choose your parents, you get to choose your family situation, and the challenges that you face in life.
Which, yeah.
Again, not necessarily saying that I believe that, just that's what I understand is, you know, reincarnation.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the third leg on this three-legged stool would be, so there's karma, reincarnation, would probably be like the concept of aura. And there's a little more something to that, I think, where a person could, you know, could result in what I think people commonly call karma. And this will actually kind of speak into our next story that has to do with manifestation. But if we get to it. If we get to it, because it's running late. It's a Saturday night.
Anyway, so, and we've already been going for over an hour.
Yes. If not, it'll just be a sequel, and you know we'll get into that next week.
Yeah, we'll have to record next week.
Yeah, exactly. this is a big problem. People, you know, because it's often talked about. You know, I mean, they're even asking here. You know, there's where do they put it in the story? There's an unmet need. Okay, so you know, one of the very popular ideas within, you know, whenever I hear the phrase unmet need, I instantly think of nonviolent communication.
Yes.
Something which years ago I was a bit of a proponent of.
And there's good things in it.
Yes, there are good things in it. However, there's a lot of bad in it. Okay. And actually, this article is hitting at, honestly, or I think our extrapolations from this article are hitting at a lot of the problems with NVC. Okay. So there, you know, one of the common needs discussed within, I mean, it's not just within NVC, it's within, you know, psychology in general, would be this human need for justice. And I don't want to, I didn't plan on talking about this, but so I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but justice is bullshit. Like,
yeah. And really, if you boil it down, I think for a lot of people, it's just a desire for vengeance.
Yes, that you hit it.
Because you don't hear stories about people saying, oh, this is such a great person. I hope wonderful things happen to them.
Right.
It's more so along the lines of, these people did this to me, and I hate them, and I hope they fail.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, why can't you just say, wish you well, and move on?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and this is my problem with the concept of rights, is that rights generally, rights are not about what you can do. Rights are more about punishment. Rights are,
yep.
Okay, you do, you know, if you break this rule or this idea or whatever, then you need to get punished. All this stuff comes down to punishment.
And vengeance.
Yeah. And vengeance. And that's not, like, punishment is not justice. But justice itself really doesn't exist, you know, and that's a wildly complex subject. But this is, if this is a problem, like it is for this 29-year-old creative, or the 42-year-old salesperson, part of the problem is that they have this belief that there is justice, which just doesn't fucking exist. You know, it's not there.
And that can make life really challenging.
Oh, yeah.
If you keep searching for justice and there's, like, nothing that you can really do to take it into your own hands.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and that's ultimately what it comes down to is, you know, people feeling a lack of agency, like, and they feel a lack of control in their life. And boy, that would play so well into our next story. But let's keep going. So here's the next subheader: limit your exposure. At the end of any relationship, we're often told to unfollow or even block the other person on all social media platforms. But for those who find it hard to cut them off immediately and completely, detaching from a stalkee and their daily activity is nonetheless necessary. Lily, a 22-year-old writer, admitted that checking up on her ex-boyfriend and his new partner 2 years after the breakup just adds salt to her emotional wounds. Quote, even if the intention behind it was to feel better about myself, it would always make me feel like shit because at the end of the day, I used to be that girl beside him making plans of growing old together, end quote, she said. Seeing anniversary and milestone posts on her feed from her ex is particularly difficult for her. Quote, it would remind me of how things were like when the breakup was still fresh, crying nonstop, screaming my lungs out in pain, and feeling all this anger and frustration and grief, end quote.
I hate that Google and Facebook do this. They're like, five years ago today, here's a picture of what you were doing. And it's like, I don't need to see that, man. I've moved on.
Yeah.
You know, that's an old me, life.
Yeah, it's incredibly insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, I think what they should do is they should have a very quick option saying, do you ever want to see this again? And you just say no.
Right, you know, because sometimes it doesn't go away for a while.
Yeah, yeah, because you'll keep getting reminded or whatever. And it's a real problem.
It is.
And admittedly, I don't blame Google or Facebook. I'll blame them for all kinds of things. This is one I don't necessarily blame for them. Because in one sense, I mean, yes, when they added the feature at first, okay, I blame them. We all know that that exists now, though. So here's a good idea. Don't fucking post that shit. You know, if you don't want to get reminded about it, don't post it, you know?
The weird thing is, though, you don't always have to post it necessarily for it to come back to you. Like, I have pictures on my phone that I guess were backed up to Google Drive somehow, but I didn't save them anywhere besides my phone. And then I get notified, oh, 5 years ago today, this is what you were doing. And it's just from, like, my camera gallery.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. It really should just be easy to turn all these things off. Like, Apple does this, too. So with the Apple Photos app, it'll auto-generate, like, albums, photo albums, or even with videos as well, based upon certain moments, you know, at certain time frames of photos and videos taken. And it'll just pop up and say, oh, here, look at the early part of your relationship with this person. Well, you know, like, I got one just the other day. And, I mean, fortunately, you know, our relationship is amazing, you know, so it was a very pleasant reminder.
Nice.
Okay, but it was a reminder from May, you know, of 2023. And so, or it was some time frame. It was months ago, anyway, bottom line. It was months ago.
I think you got one for Captain, too. Like, we had a whole photo album of the cat.
Yeah, it's a nice feature, but it's one that can go drastically wrong, you know, if... Like, you just broke up with somebody, and you get that notification, oh, remember the early moments of your love? And you're like, oh, fuck, man, you know? And, I mean, it'd be 10 times worse if, you know, like, I was going through that, you know, and seeing pictures of you and going, oh, my God, like, what did I do?
We don't have to think about that.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. So that can be bad. And yes, these are things that can be turned off. Basically, I guess ultimately where I would still blame the tech giants on it is it should be something you turn on. Like, it should not be on by default.
Yeah, it should be auto off.
Yeah, it should be an option. You opt in, not out. And boy, there's that wonderful cat. It's just hanging out under the desk.
He's so cute.
Yeah. So, let's see. Yeah. I guess we'll keep reading on a bit more.
Yeah, I do just want to point out again, like, Lily, the 22-year-old writer, saying it's putting salt in the wounds. So, like, every time you check in on this person, you're just reminded of all the negative experiences you had with them.
Yeah.
And it really is self-inflicted pain. And it's unnecessary. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, and to some degree, this part of it, you know, I don't know if there was a corollary. Like, we can say, you know, with the previous examples, you know, we can say, well, like, okay, people did hate stalking with newspapers. People did hate stalking with reality TV or whatever, you know, like there were previous examples. This is one where it's like, outside of a little photo album, and photos used to be expensive to take. It wasn't like there were millions of them like there are now.
Right.
That wasn't so much there. So this is something kind of new for people to deal with. You know, I mean, the only example I think that we could look at would be maybe like high school reunions, you know, would be, you know, something that existed before social media. But let's read on. It's important to track moments when you feel the need to social stalk and assess what factors those instances may have in common. Were you in a specific place that reminded you of them, hanging out with certain people or doing a particular activity? Maybe this could also be indicative of a larger personal issue we have, like in Annie's case. Quote, now I'm trying to see if my hate stalking is a manifestation of my demand avoidance. If I'm doing this just to ignore what I know I should be doing to make my life better, end quote, she said. And yeah, that's where it ultimately becomes a problem, like we said earlier, is that, okay, there's not necessarily anything wrong with this. It's just when it keeps you from living your own life.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, you know, when you break up with someone, doing things that you need to do, evolving,
right.
Making your life better, like she says, you know, those are the things that you're avoiding by doing this hate stalking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that's what you need to do in order to move beyond it.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and I think the article kind of gets to it. I mean, there's a flip side to that, though, is that actually that, even that attitude of like, oh, I wish I was that, you know, I used to be the girl next to this guy or whatever, and I, you know, kind of wish I was there again. There's a flip side where that might actually be a good thing. And we'll get to it.
I'm suspicious.
All right, let's keep reading. Put a plan in motion. If we're not careful, social media stalking can go from a harmless little treat to a negative reflex that bleeds into our daily routines. Quote, acknowledging the urge as it creeps up on us and giving ourselves a few minutes to pause before acting on it could be helpful, end quote, said Krems.
That's always helpful?
Yeah, that's helpful in literally everything.
Yes.
Again, that space between stimulus and response, like just pause, create friction between pretty much any action that doesn't need to be an instinct or instinctually built up. Yeah, very helpful. Okay, exercising the self-restraint, even in small increments, can help us think about whether it's something we really want to do or just a habit our brains and thumbs have grown accustomed to. All right, I'm going to stop on this for a second. So I have dealt with the problem of notifications for a long time. And the single most powerful thing for me is to actually turn notifications off and, like email, even not just social media, but email, kill all the notifications, because unless it's your work email, which you can handle on your work device, you can check your email once a day, you know, and that's probably good enough. And you can deal with them all more intentionally. Even with social media. Okay, you know, pick once a day where you go to check it. And then you're done.
And that keeps it from being an addictive habit, is what you're saying, is checking your notifications.
Yeah, because otherwise our devices program us to do these very things. Because maybe you set up notifications to find out how this person's doing or whatever. And notifications are just the fucking worst. You know, those, you got to do what you got to do to put a stop to those.
Yeah, it really elicits a Pavlovian response.
Exactly.
Every time you hear that vibration or that little ting sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just, you know, you instantly respond.
Right.
With attention. Like, right. Your attention goes straight to it.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, oh man, there's so much I want to say about this, but we won't. We'll save that. Reading on. Other long-term examples that could help kill this habit include losing ourselves in something else. Maybe a hobby, a piece of media, or even another person. Quote, lately I found that crocheting and going on TikTok instead helps me. Lily said. It can also help to open up to someone we trust so we can process what we feel rather than forcing ourselves to seek out information that confirms our destructive beliefs.
Well, that's great. I'm really glad that, you know, these people are finding others to talk about this impulse with.
Yeah, maybe hopefully in real life.
Yeah.
Like actually sit down with them, have a coffee, I don't know.
Just to, you know, bounce some ideas off of them and to say, like, this is what I'm doing. Even just expressing it, I think, would be alleviating. But also just to put it out there into reality so that you can reflect on it.
Right.
Like, is this really what I want my life to be?
Right. Right. And getting that outside perspective, maybe not so outside at times, but, you know, getting that person who at least is outside of your head, their perspective can be super helpful. So in extreme cases like those that require a total digital detox, we could find ourselves making excuses instead of taking steps to curb our behavior. In this case, Sturmer invites us to examine why this may be the case. Quote, perhaps you don't want to put boundaries in place because you say you really need social media for other purposes. Ask yourself if this is really true and try to seek out ways to get only the information that you need elsewhere, end quote.
Yeah, so like maybe uninstalling certain apps from your phone?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little trick that can be helpful as well, is get rid of the actual app version of it and instead load up the mobile version, the mobile website version of it, you know, on your browser. Because, you know, at least then that's creating some degree of friction.
Yeah, that additional step might make you slow down and think about what you're doing a little bit. More than just tapping it open.
Right. It's like putting duct tape on the refrigerator, you know, when you're dieting. I mean, it's the same idea. It might not always work, but at least it's something. You know, if anything, it's a reminder, oh, there's a reason I uninstalled the app.
Yep.
You know, like at least have that.
There's a good reason I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, accept that it's a normal part of life. Here's the next subheader. Contrary to popular belief, keeping tabs on social media of people you don't like isn't always this shameful activity that signals the beginning of a depressive episode or unhealthy obsession. When taken at face value, it's just another means to acquire new knowledge. And if we find exactly what we're looking for, it could significantly improve our outlook. Quote, I found out that my former coworker didn't get into the company she wanted and was forced into retirement. Rika said, it's amusing to see her trying to convince everyone that she's happy with how her life looks now, end quote.
So it sounds like she got what she wanted.
Yeah, it seems like she did get her sense of karmic justice. I want to put a pin on that because I want to talk about that one more. But there's only like three more paragraphs here, so let's wrap it up. In other occasions, it can even serve as a means to strengthen or start relationships. Quote, there's a possibility that shared hate might actually bring us together more than shared love. Stanley, breaking in for a second. Now, that's fucking huge. And we'll get into it. Okay, but let me keep reading. If we both hate the same person, perhaps we have underlying similarities that could make us good or make us great cooperators, said Kearns. This coalitional hate stalking can feel good because we're both discovering information and bonding together, which could have great payoffs for our well-being, end quote. While this might seem like a reach to some, let's face it, no matter how much we claim to have moved on, the right mixture of boredom and curiosity could compel us to check up on a certain person. The Schadenfreude that can come with that doesn't mean we're irredeemable or evil human beings. Our feelings toward the events in our lives and the people we meet are valid and varied. As long as our social media check-ins aren't an obsessive and organized effort to ruin someone else's life or to hurt ourselves, we don't need to beat ourselves up when we go down the same old spiral. Quote, not liking someone and wishing them ill, should we be doing that? That's a question that depends on our morality, Kearns said. But does almost everyone do that? I think the answer is yes, end quote. Okay, so I want to break down a whole lot in this last part.
Go for it.
All right. One thing that I want to bring up, a major problem with social media, and it was abundantly clear in some of the examples in this story, is that when we go on social media, whether we realize it or not, we are treating our existence like a video game. In a very real sense, there are buttons you push. Again, these things were designed by people who make games, maybe not video games, but they do those as well, for casinos. Okay? Social media is literally a video game. To the point that there are graphics on the screen that change based upon actions that you do. Like, it is a video game in every sense of the term. And what ends up happening for most people, because they don't realize that it's a video game, what happens to them is they start treating everyone else in their life like an NPC, like a non-player character. And they think they're the only person with actual agency, and that everyone else really just kind of exists for them. They're just part of the environment around them. And so you do get this sense of, I want this person to go through this, or you get all these feelings. And this is the same issue. Again, we might not get to the story, but, just kind of a hook for it if we get to it next time. This is the same issue that happens with concepts of, like, manifestation, which is all the rage on social media right now and has been for a few years, really. But is that in manifestation, you are treating everyone, you want to manifest a boyfriend or someone else in your life or this or that. You're basically treating everybody like a fucking NPC, like it's just a part of the program game and they're not actually a player or a champion themselves within the game, right?
Yeah, I just want to interject here. Please. And say, I don't know that I'd blame social media for that specifically, but yes, I do think people have that tendency sometimes.
Yeah. No, and it's not just social media, but I'm just saying social media is programmed that way, and I think it can create that idea in your life. And it, you're even going for the points, right? Like, you're playing Mario or whatever game, and you're almost going for the points. What are the points? How many likes do I get on this? And then you're strategizing. Oh, how do I, how do I get more likes? Right? I mean, it becomes a game. It is a game. And so I think it does end up where people become almost sociopathic, thinking that everyone else is effectively just an NPC.
Is this why you're so good at social media?
Secret's out. Because I'm one of the greatest gamers of all time.
Yes. So, exactly.
And so,
well, you were boasting at the beginning of this how good you are at social media.
Yeah, well, anyway.
But you are also very good at video games.
Yeah, so I recognize it for what it is. There we are. All right. So that's just a side comment. But well done.
Thank you.
All right, now... But now let's get into other parts of this, okay? So let's see. I found out that my former coworker didn't get into the company she wanted and was forced into retirement. It's amusing to see her trying to convince everyone that she's happy with how her life looks now. Okay. Now, this is one of the... Here's the thing. They call it hate stalking. This is where that turns into a bit of a misnomer. Okay? Or at least we need to recognize where, like you said earlier, Ellen, where this kind of low-level version of hate, right? Not criminal, quote-unquote criminal acts, but what are those? But not, you know, like acts of hate. This is where we need to recognize that it's a good thing. Okay? Like, it's almost the healthy concept, the healthy version of competition, right? Not where you're squashing your enemies, but just where you're taking kind of joy in the winning of things.
Okay? In their failure. You're taking joy in their failure.
Right, right. And it's not even necessarily that you won. It's just that, you know, they lost, right? Even though maybe you didn't win, but they lost. Like, and that's getting into a lot of convoluted terms.
Yeah, but then it's just confirmation bias. You know, it's like, I'm the good person and they're the bad person and they deserve this. And when they finally get it, you're like, okay, yes, I actually am the good person.
See, yeah, yeah.
I was right this whole time.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, my point and good person, you know, good, bad, what does that mean?
It depends on the context.
Exactly, exactly. But my point is that you do get kind of confirmation that you're on a beneficial path, you know, yourself, and that you're walking the path, perhaps, you know, that you've been setting up for yourself.
Maybe, but the thing is that, like, you know, if you're dating someone, for example, or you've made friends with someone, generally these are things that only last a few years. And then if you have a falling out, you know, that could be anywhere between, like, a few weeks and maybe, like, 10 years of your life, you know? So having that falling out and then looking at their life, you know, their life is going to go on. Even through the lens of social media, they're going to continue living just as long as you do.
Yes.
Most of the time, anyway. I shouldn't say that 100% of the time.
Sure, sure.
But the thing is, like, the story continues. It's not like one and done. This person lost their job and they had to retire, so now their life sucks. The end. Like, it's a continually evolving story.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, because... You know, as I like to say many times, you know, not every opportunity is for you. And that's okay. You know, sometimes an opportunity is for someone else. It's just that one wasn't for you, you know, and there's plenty more. There always is, if you're going for it. But that kind of gets to the main point I want to bring up is that hate, not hate of, oh, I hate people because their skin's different. Or I hate people, you know, like these stupid, superficial things that have nothing to do and don't affect you personally whatsoever, you know, right? Like that's bullshit, you know, that's the kind of hate that leads you nowhere. And ultimately it doesn't lead you anywhere. But I would argue there is a hate and an anger that is incredibly powerful and that makes you a better person. Okay. As in, you know, in this case... it's amusing to see her trying to convince everyone that she's happy with how her life looks now. So Rika knows this person and can see, oh, she's bullshitting. Oh, like that. No, she's smiling.
She's lying through her teeth.
Yeah, she's not smiling. I know the real deal. And there is a joy. Now, part of that is there's a joy in secrets. There's a joy in, everybody's duped, but I know the reality. You know, I know that she's not really like that. And there is, we love, as humans, we love secrets. Like, we hate them and we love them. We hate them when we're not in on them. We love them when we are. It's a very paradoxical relationship.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
But I also interpreted that feeling that you're just describing, I've always interpreted that more as a, like, taking joy in knowing something that will keep you safe, and if that person ever does try to pull the same thing on you in the future, you can shut them down.
Yes.
So fast.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a certain, like, righteous indignation, like I said earlier, you know, that you can feel when that happens.
Yes.
And that's the joy that I think you're describing.
Yeah. So this is what I'm, so this is ultimately what I'm getting at, is that hate stalking can lead you to becoming a better person. because, again, you've taken in, like they said, you've taken in new knowledge. And so you know how to avoid that trap in the future. Or you know how to handle this kind of person in the future or whatever.
Yeah, I think if you're using it as a tool of reflection or of growth, then it's okay. But
yeah, but you're doing it. You hate the person. You can't stand the person. Okay, and so, you know, might as well call that hate. That's fine. And it's something where, okay, I don't want to end up like them, you know, and I'm glad I'm not like them. And so it's a jumping off point. It's almost a cue. What's the word I'm looking for? A prompt. It's almost a prompt for you to become a better person, you know, or to even feel gratitude for what you have. You know, which is also a powerful thing and works towards betterment. You know, gratitude's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I suppose you could use it as a way to look at somebody's life and say, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
I have a lot better than that, and I'm really grateful for that.
Right, right. But you have to use it to make yourself better. Otherwise, it's addiction. Like, that's to me, that's kind of the difference.
Yeah, or unnecessary pain.
Right.
Because pain does not 100% all the time equate to you being a better person because you experienced pain.
Yeah, no, right, right.
Sometimes pain is purposeless.
True, yeah. I mean, there's pain that you can grow from, but there is pain that's purpose. Right, right. It has no purpose. Yeah, so, and then to get to the other part here where it says there's a possibility that that shared hate might actually bring us together more than shared love. If we both hate the same person, perhaps we have underlying similarities that can make us great cooperators.
Yeah, note that they said that it's a good way to start relationships.
Yes, right.
It's not a way to continue relationships.
Yeah, no.
But you can certainly meet people who are like-minded and start a relationship that way.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where you can, I think, kind of on a broader swath say that hate will ultimately get you nowhere if you just keep hating. But it is a great way to start. It can be a really, really great way to start. How did you and I ultimately end up together? How did you and I ultimately end up meeting each other? How did you and I ultimately end up in New Hampshire?
Yeah, well,
we fucking hate the government.
Exactly.
We fucking hate authority. I mean, we hate it with a tremendous passion.
And so do all of the other people that we moved here to hang out with.
Yeah, but now we're not in love with all of them.
No. Nope.
And the reason is, again, it's a good starting point, but that's all that it is.
It's a jumping off point.
It's a jumping off point.
It only takes you so far.
Right. That's the phrase I was trying to think of earlier. It's a jumping off point. But that's the thing, is that it is healthy. It's not, I mean, it can be unhealthy. Anything can be.
If it's obsessive.
Right.
Then
if it becomes obsessive, then it becomes addiction, right? It can be. But for us to say, oh, we shouldn't judge other people or we shouldn't hate other people, and this is another, you know, major point that I want to get into, is that no, judgment, discernment is a damn good thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's like, oh, you shouldn't judge other people. Yes, you should. Now, I mean, what other people do, is it ultimately any of your business? No.
And your judgment can be totally wrong.
Yeah, right. Your judgment can be totally wrong. You know, you're not in their shoes. You don't really know what's going on. And so it's something that you certainly want to use with some caution. You know, it's not something you want to just like necessarily constantly walk around with, or at least be aware of that you don't know what everybody's going through. And that's important. So you don't have to act on it. But what we're talking about here, this kind of silent seething that these people do on social media, in my opinion, that is, as long as it's not taking over their lives and keeping them from becoming better and from improving, that is a wonderful damn thing. It's a great thing. I think it's phenomenal to like get and I mean, I'll edit this out if you want me to, you know, but, you know, we'll go shopping, you know, and you or whatever, or even if you go to the gym, fuck, you know, like, and you get in the car after and you just start laughing about the shit and the people you saw.
Yeah, gossiping with you about strange things that people do, that's really fun.
Yes.
And it also reminds us, like, this is why we think we're so great.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and you connect over that. That's great. But we're constantly given this message that no. Oh, you don't know what they're going, and yeah, you don't know what they're going through. But oh no, oh, you shouldn't judge or you shouldn't do this. It's like, no, you don't have to like be mean about it and get in other people's faces about any of these things.
No, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, but it's okay to do that, and it creates that bonding like they're talking about. You know, it can create that bonding. It is wonderful. It's not bad. You know, this idea that somehow, you know, hating other people and all this other jazz is like, is some kind of terrible thing. No, no, the terrible thing is when you commit acts of hate. That's a problem. All right. But like in general, if it's something that bolsters you on, that pushes you on, I mean, fuck, do I know about bullies? Oh, baby, do I know about bullies? You know, like, I mean, I've talked about it on the show in the past and everything. All they did was inspire me for me to be so much fucking better.
Yes.
So much stronger.
Yeah, not to mention, like you were saying about judging other people. It's okay. It's great to judge other people.
Yeah.
But you can't walk up to that person and say, this is what I'm judging you for.
Right.
Because, again, you might be totally wrong in your judgment, which is why you keep it to yourself and you only share it with someone, you know, who you feel safe talking about it with.
Right.
You know, or, you know, keep it to yourself forever and don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Like, you can't act on these judgments because they could be totally premature, but it's okay to have them.
Yes.
Because everyone does. And you need it to function.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're right, too.
Yeah, right. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, I've talked about this many times in the past. Most people don't remember this commercial. EA Sports, Electronic Arts, talking about video games, in the 90s, had the most, just the most brilliant fucking ad campaign, in my opinion, just about ever. Okay? And it was giving you the history of sports. And I'm not even a sports fan, but whatever. It was giving you the history of sports. And it said, the first sport started when one guy said to another guy, or when one person said to another person, I'm better than you, and I can prove it.
Yep, that's the essence of sports.
I get chills just saying that, but that's wonderful. You know, the difference, the problem is that most, the trap that people fall into, not just the addiction or the obsession, the problem is when you think you're the best, the only one. That's when people start turning into NPCs around you again. The problem is when you think you're the best. Here's what anybody who's engaged in the action of constant embetterment, shall we say, of being better, knows. There's always someone better.
Yeah.
Like, there's always, you don't know who they are. There's billions of people on this planet. You can't know. But you have to recognize the problem with being the best is there's always someone better, right? This is it's a paradoxical statement, but like I always tell listeners, when you hit a paradox, you're getting close to the truth, okay? And that's the truth. Is you got to realize, yeah, you're the best, but there's always someone better. And that's, it doesn't temper you, but it's just, it's your understanding. It's your grasping of reality of how this works. But judging people, wanting to be better, doing all that is fine and dandy. That is wonderful. That's great. And I think also when you get into that, do you have comments on that?
Yeah, I wanted to say conversely, like when you decide to hate something about someone.
Yeah.
I think that kind of speaks to what it is that we love about life.
Yes.
Yes. And I know this is kind of going down a different route than what you were just
saying. Do it.
But I think it's important to bring up that this is why you're saying that it's so good and healthy and important to hate certain things about people. Because if you say, hate the fact that somebody is verbally abusive, then that means that you respect other people, that you don't want to be verbally abusive, that you actually want to be kind and considerate, and not allow your emotions to overtake you and put you into a rage. You know, there's all sorts of things that you can learn from that experience. So like hating abuse or intolerance of certain races or whatever, like that is speaking to your values.
Yes.
In a real way.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. In fact, I don't think you expected me to bring this up, but okay, I'll do it here, and it's based on what you were saying. So I didn't plan on it. But there's a great song by Scott Stapp called Name, off of his album Space Between the Shadows. And the whole song is about how he hates his dad and is so angry at his dad and everything that he went through. I mean, he's just, you can hear the, I mean, Scott Stapp's such a phenomenal singer. You can hear the anger in his voice.
And when we were listening to the song, I really felt it because he's like, he just left me my name and then he was gone. And I was like, damn, I felt the same way my whole life.
You went through so much the same. Yes, yeah. Right. Okay. But then what's his resolution? His resolution is, and now I'm an adult. I'm a father. This is the lyrics of the song. I'm an adult. I'm a father. I have a, you know, I have a son, and he's never going to know that pain.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He hates his dad. He's angry at his dad. It fills him with anger when he thinks about what he had to go through. That anger is what's keeping him from ever doing that to his son.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
His great compassion.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so this is the paradox. And again, the biggest, maybe the real big problem here is that people can't hold paradoxes and can't respect paradox. But perhaps there's only a compassion that exists on the other side of anger. And the message that I really want to get out with this isn't even about social media. Okay, I mean, there's more I could say on it, and maybe I will. But this idea that anger is bad, that hate is bad, you know, that these things are bad. No, 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 no. You know, things that don't have to harm others and make you, and inspire you and make you, or, you know, and drive you to be better are absolutely healthy things. How could they not be? You're fucking healthier than you were yesterday because of it.
Yeah, and the only bad thing in this situation, if you are really angry about something, is not allowing yourself to feel that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're actually denying yourself a chance to grow. And it's a sort of life-giving activity in a way.
Right.
So, you know, that's the only bad thing is if you block yourself from feeling these things.
Yeah.
Like, actually feeling it is a good experience.
Yeah. And this is where, again, the Buddhists get it wrong. You know, we brought them up earlier. This is another area where they get it dead fucking wrong. And because what they go for is this tranquility. To accept that, oh, what's happening around me doesn't matter. You know, I'm just trying to get to that next level, just trying to get to nirvana. What's happening around me just doesn't matter. And you want to talk about sociopaths? You want to talk about, you know, like, psychotic? To suggest to not care about what's happening around you, you know? That's just messed up on so many levels. Because... No, it does matter, and it does affect you, and these are real people, you know, going through their own shit, and whatever that happens to be. And perhaps, you know, you can choose to help them in that or not, or, you know, it helps you in some strange way or whatever. But, like, this idea that somehow you should be able to find, like, incredible peace amongst so much, you know, suffering and everything else, or to find peace in every lot of your life. I think that's crazy to, you know, even though conversely they would say it's them trying to get better, trying to get to that like point of nirvana. I don't buy it. You know, there's something terribly, if there is a wrong, there's something terribly wrong in that.
I think it's okay to find peace with how things are, even if they're not what you want them to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I think acceptance is a step on the path of growth. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's not something... So if, like with all things, if you get stuck in it, it can be a bad thing. You know, like if you get stuck in hate, you're not going to grow.
Yeah.
But if you can reach the point where you can say... All right, I feel really badly about what happened between me and this person.
Right.
And I have these behaviors. This is how I'm reacting to the situation. And you can accept it and just say, like, these are my actions, X, Y, Z.
Yes.
So that kind of leads you to the next step, which is, how do I get beyond this?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think that anger and hate... are reactions, right? And you always want to act more than you react, right? You want to create more than you consume. You want, I mean, these are just good kind of life concepts to run by, I think.
Yeah, like if you're smart, you'll put yourself in a situation where you're less likely to encounter something you hate.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you're never, and you don't even want to be, because without reaction, there's no empathy either. You know, like, reactions aren't all negative. You want to act more than you react, because if you're not acting, then you're not an individual. You don't have agency. But, you know, just understand that, okay, yeah, there, you know, there's, you don't, because there's also a lot of people out there, especially, and this would lead right into the manifestation thing, but we won't go there. Not this time. Well, that'll be next episode. Because you have a lot of people who are like, oh no, you're creating your reality. You're doing this. No, you're a co-creator, but you're creating your reality. You're doing this and that.
Yeah, if the thoughts are obsessive, then that is creating a reality around you.
Well, yeah, in a way you are, sure. Yeah. But you know, they're speaking on like an even larger scale. And the problem with that, they're basically saying you need to get to a place of 100% action and not reaction.
That's not realistic.
No, it's not realistic, and it's not even healthy. Again, reacting to things, that's okay. Yes, you want to act more than you react, but that doesn't mean reacting is bad.
No, right? Because we live in a chaotic world.
Yes.
Where you can't predict everything that's going to happen to you.
Right. Chaos is the nature of the universe. And so, you know, but again, empathy and hate, you know, we talk about two sides of the coin. I mean, they are two sides of a coin, and they're both part of reaction, you know. And then so I guess a part of me kind of wants to, I mean, the most important thing to bring up is that a lot of these emotions that we talk about are like nonsensical terms that don't have good definitions, or they have a million definitions and we never know which ones we're talking about anyway. Okay. But I really, like, when I read this story, all I could think was, wow, you know, they're seeing, it was powerful to read, you know, that no, actually hate can be a very good thing. That was wonderful to read that. And by proxy, that anger is a very good thing. Like, yes, 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 yes. It's beautiful to finally read people like saying that. And I'm sure this story went under the radar, unfortunately.
It's really interesting to hear you saying that, because when I first read this article, red flags were coming up for me left and right. Like, this is a bad, dangerous behavior and everybody should beware. Although, yes, it's okay to feel hate sometimes. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
like, you know, it's fine to do this internet stalking to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
But it's not always healthy. And, like, that's just the main point that I want to get across. I totally agree with you, of course.
Sure.
But just having been a person who's experienced this behavior, I know from experience, like, yeah, it's harmful and not always in a good way. And you have to, you know, reflect on that experience in order to say, learn, like, okay, well, I don't want to be like this or this, so I'm going to grow in this direction.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hear what you're saying, that, like, you were really excited to find out that somebody's saying that it's okay to hate or dislike certain things about other people.
Yeah, I mean, this is amazing. You know, again, to read that line, there's a possibility that shared hate might actually bring us together more than shared love. Like, no fucking shit, you know? But again, like you said, the key thing in that is that it's a starting off point. It's not the end game. The end, you know, and when people treat it as the end game, well, that's...
No, it's really people's love that sustains their relationship.
Yes, love is what sustains. Absolutely. I like that.
And that's also something I want to get across, because I've talked to, you know, coworkers or whoever about this, and I've heard people say that, you know, love, or that hate is a really great binding force.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it can be in the beginning, but it's not going to hold you together forever.
Right.
Like, it's just the starting off point.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And it takes a lot of energy, and it doesn't make people happy.
No, that's why you can't keep it up. It's because it does take so much, like, anger takes so much energy. Again, I'm not saying it's an unhealthy thing. I think it's a great thing, you know? But you can't keep it up.
No, no. Anything that induces stress just makes life that much more challenging. And hate is one of those things that can really put you in a stressed state.
Yeah.
So you have to achieve some amount of peace or happiness or contentment or whatever in order to just survive.
Yes. Yeah. Eventually you have to take action, which should end, you know, should only end in you being a better person, at, you know, on the other side, which is what leads to that contentment. Yeah. So, again, the main point I wanted to bring out is that, look, judging people, hating people, being angry about shit, all that, good things. Like, it's okay. Take, now, I mean, some of the actions you want to take upon that stuff, or if it keeps you from living your life, then it's a problem. But in and of themselves, just fine.
Yeah, just don't be an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a dick, you know? I mean, I'm the most elitist fucking asshole.
And nobody knows it.
And nobody knows. Nobody has any fucking idea. You know. But you know what? Because here's the thing. So I want, you know, like, say for me in my life, I want people to be XYZ, right? Whatever the hell that is. But if you're not, I don't care. Like, okay.
Because ultimately it's about you wanting to be that.
Yeah, right. And I'm wanting to be challenged, mm-hmm. You know? Like, I'm wanting,
wanting to be inspired.
I want, yes. Because, and you know this, and you say it so much better than me because you've heard me just a million times a day, you know, about all this stuff. I want people around me that challenge me and inspire me, you know, to be that better person and to grow. Like, I want, you know, people around me to help me be, you know, I want them to even be better, you know, so that it's that crucible that I get hammered on against. And that's really what I want. But if you're not that, okay, that's all right. Go, live your life. Go on. I'm not going to do anything to you. I don't give a shit, you know?
No, we support you in whatever decision you want to make yourself.
Right. I've been saying this since episode one of this show. If you want to sit on a couch and eat Doritos and watch whatever, and, you know, and just do that most of your life, rock and roll, man. I don't care. You know, like, it's no skin off my back. I don't give a shit. All right, so let's wrap the show up. We're at about the two-hour mark. I want to ask a quick question. It probably doesn't have a quick answer, but I want to ask it to you. Okay, so you're on Instagram again.
Yeah, right? I am.
Everybody can just go to nwo.red. You can find our Instagrams. You can find us wherever the hell we are. Online.
Yeah, Ellen Sovereign and Lord Sovereign.
Yeah, exactly. There's our handles. So, I think. Or is yours Mrs. Sovereign?
I'm Ellen Sovereign.
Ellen Sovereign. Okay. So, I keep hearing about how people get, like, body dysmorphia and a lot of these other things when they go on Instagram. Like, they see people living these amazing lives and there's, like, jealousy or something, or they have this amazing body or whatever, and, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, that's photoshopped, or, oh, you know, they're doing this or that with a picture, whatever that happens to be. I don't know, like, and maybe it speaks to the point you just made about me wanting to be inspired and challenged. Like, when I go, I mean, you really can choose who you follow on these things.
Yeah, but you don't choose the advertisements.
No, you don't choose the ads.
And the ads are like every other fucking picture.
Yeah, that's bad. Even though with Instagram you can do like the following tab and then they kind of go away, but whatever. That is a problem. But here's kind of what I'm getting at is, you know, I go on Instagram. And I see these people, and I'm just, like, I'm happy for them.
Sure.
And if they look better than me, which, that's not hard, but if they look better than me, like, you know, oh, wow. You know what I mean? And like, okay, you know, I kind of want to learn from them. Now, I also have the knowledge of, say, like, with bodybuilders or whatever, okay, they're doing PEDs, you know, they're doing steroids or whatever. I'm not going to go that route. Good for you. You know, you it took you to that level. That's great. You know, but that's like, I just, there's a mindset problem. I think also when people go on social media, especially very visual social media, where they're just seeing it as, oh, I'm not that shit, you know? And it's almost defeatist. And I don't know what exactly is behind that. When you go on Instagram, I mean, how do you feel? Like, when you see someone that you think is in some way, quote unquote, better, which in my opinion is impossible, but whatever, okay. If you feel that way, I mean, like, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I just want to say, I think what you said about there being a mindset problem is probably close to the mark.
Yeah.
For a lot of people who do feel insecure or body dysmorphia when they see Instagram models.
Right.
Because, so I remember seeing this comic once, and it really summed it up perfectly for me. and it basically just said, if they're more beautiful than you, then you're automatically cooler than them. And that's just, like, the mindset that most people have, you know? Like, everybody else is an NPC. Like, oh, if they're skinnier than you, then you're just smarter than them. Mm-hmm. Or you're cooler because of whatever. And I guess I'm still kind of afflicted by that in a way. Like, when I see Instagram models and they have these conventionally perfect bodies, I just think, well, at least I'm not that narcissistic, you know? And that makes me feel better about the fact that I'm not posting pictures of me in a swimsuit every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm, like, opposed to doing that. It's just that, like, I don't need to do that because, like, you already see me naked all the time. Oof, and I get plenty of justification and, you know, encouraging words from you. So, like, I don't need that from everyone else.
Right.
And the other thing is, like, when I see Instagram models or advertisements or whatever, and there's, like, all of these really attractive, good-looking people, you know, there's a certain component to that of that where I just chalk it up to, like, genetic differences, and, like, there's no way that I'm going to have the perfect curvy hips or whatever, because I was born with hip dips, so, like, it's just not something that I can achieve, and I'm fine with that, because it actually doesn't matter what my hips look like, you know?
Yes.
Like, if I could pay for a surgery to make myself appear that way, but that's not actually what I look like, and I just don't feel the need to change myself in order to match that standard. Now, I get it that there are some people who have, you know, bought into the idea that they do need to change their body to look that way, but, like, that's just a lie that people have been sold so that they can buy more products.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a certain part of me that, like, yeah, I do want to meet certain expectations of beauty. But then there's another part of me that's like, why? That's fucked up, you know? Be yourself.
Yeah, right, right.
But it's easy to fall into that mindset when you go online and that's all you see.
Yeah, well, I think you hit it a couple things. I mean, first off, I want to say that, like, if you're looking, you know, part of the lie is that people think you have to, you know, the only way, like, if you're a guy, the only way you're going to get this gal or guy is if you look like X, you know, if you have this, you know, and you look just so, you know. First off, let me assure you, I am one ugly motherfucker. And
no, you're not.
No, I am. And
I don't think you are.
No, and I have, like room-breaking flaws, right, that, but at the same time, I am with just one of the absolute hottest on anybody's scale. Like, and I relish in that. You know, like, I don't mind at all when somebody says, "Wow, your wife's hot." But okay, you know, hottest, smartest, successful, incredibly successful woman. You know,
Thank you. So
you don't have to look like anything, okay? You know, to have that in your life. Is the first point that I want to bring up.
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
Okay. At the same time, you hit at something really powerful there, is that, and this is just as true in bodybuilding and it's true through every aspect of life, you don't have the genetics, right? Like, that's what you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or epigenetics.
Yeah.
I don't know which.
Right. Right. Now, I mean, there's an argument to be made within, you know, like, the biology of belief, right? Some of the work around that and how, you know, there could be epigenetic changes that do this or that. Maybe. Okay. This is going to be a nice tease for the manifestation conversation we'll have in the next episode, because that needs to get taken care of. But we're basically given this message, you know, like, we're told anger is bad. We're told these things are bad. One of the things we're told is that, you know, everybody's the same, right? But that's not true. Okay. There there are genetic differences, you know, like in the fitness industry, like there are people who have the genetics to do an incredible, you know, to do whatever, a 4 or 5 second mile, whatever, not second mile, but
a 4 minute mile.
Right. A 4 minute mile.
That's incredibly rare.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You have to be sprinting the entire mile.
Yeah. But probably the difference, yeah, talent is a factor, but probably the difference is genetics somewhere.
Yes.
Something within that. I mean, if it makes you feel better, let's talk about horses, right? How did Secretariat win so many fucking races? Well, when Secretariat died and they cut him up, they cut him open, his heart, that horse's heart was fucking gigantic. Like, it was crazy. So, of course he could do those races. And he had endurance that blew away other horses. Why? Because his heart was huge. You know, and he just had that amazing cardiovascular ability. And so that's the part we don't get taught, is that, like, look, and it's not saying necessarily that, oh, little Johnny, no, he's just better than you. It's just respecting. And the part we miss is, and appreciating, our genetic differences, you know, and how each of those brings in something new and some other ability. And we don't have, instead of having this appreciation for someone else's abilities or someone else's this or that, instead we have a jealousy. And again, this might kind of sound like I'm double speaking on, like, wait, but I thought hate was good. Well, I'm not saying jealousy is good, but
no, jealousy really doesn't. It's not a helpful experience.
No, right? No, it's not. And I think you really hit at it, is that I don't think we're, from children to adults, I don't think we're taught enough just how big a factor genetics play in fucking anything. That doesn't, just because, and look, just because somebody has genetics that allows them to have certain hips or bigger muscles or whatever, that doesn't make them a worthier person. Okay, like that's, we got to be really clear on that.
It just,
like,
makes them a different person.
It just makes them different. But as soon as you said genetic, I was like, ah, that's the message that's not being told, is that you're, I mean, yes, there's photoshopping, there's all the shit that's happening. But if we could just say to kids, like, look, there is such a thing as a genetic lottery, and we all win it in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, and
I think there's a real beauty in radical self-acceptance.
Yeah.
And not needing to be jealous of anyone else for how they were born.
Yeah.
And just accepting who you are as a person and being happy with that and making the best of it.
Make the best of it, though. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, don't acquiesce. It's not about giving up. It's about, okay, well, this is what I am. And so here we go. Here's going to be the best me. And whatever shape that takes.
Like, I'm not the most shapely person, but I have great legs.
Oh, holy fuck. Those things, it's like you just had them lengthened. They go all the way up. Your legs are phenomenal.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
I'm just saying, you know, like, there's still things to relish in, even though I'm not a perfectly shaped human being, according to modern beauty standards.
You are.
Which, let me just say, those change incredibly from decade to decade. So what do they even mean?
Yeah.
Nothing. It's more of a trend thing than it is, you know, an innate attraction that people have to certain things.
Right.
You can try to justify it however you want, like better reproductivity or something like that. But I think there have been trends throughout human history that have nothing to do with that.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's just about, like, wealth or strength or, you know, fitness.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
The ability to survive better, maybe. But then there's things that people are into that, you know, like being smothered by an overweight person. Some people are into that. And you know what? Good for you.
Yeah, okay.
But what does that have to do with anything, really?
Right.
Or, like, being into feet. You know, that's another weird thing where it's like, why are people attracted to this?
There's
no justification for it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any evolutionary reason for that, and it's very hard to
come up with. And it just doesn't matter.
No, right, it doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't matter. It's okay to get, you know, like, to get inspired, and even with anger and hate and things like this and judgment and all that, you know, to want to be the better version of you. But yeah, you're you. And that's all right. The other person, they are what they are. But yeah, boy, I really think you hit on something there, though, because that's something we're just not taught. That, like, look, sometimes there's nothing you can do about it, you know, and it's just genetics. Again, we all win in the genetic lottery. We just win different lotteries. We just win in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, okay, unless you go for plastic surgery, which...
Yeah, that's even more sad when people do edit their own bodies to match up more with whatever current body standards are in place.
Yeah,
Because that's really, I think, an expression of maybe a certain form of insecurity.
Right.
Or, you know, needing that validation from other people.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, anything, here's a very key point. Anything that is fake on a long enough timeline will be discovered as fake. And there's only one reaction to fake. You know, and generally that's disgust. Like, really? You know, I mean,
disappointment.
Yeah, or disappointment. Like, well, like one where it ends and it's negativity in some form. You know, when you find out that something's fake. Yeah, there you go. Anyway.
Great conversation.
Great conversation. So get out there and...
Be real.
And hate. No.
No, just be you. Yeah. Just be real. Don't be afraid to feel all the crazy, chaotic things that you feel.
It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be this.
It's okay to be ugly.
Yeah.
It's okay to be mean.
Right.
Well, maybe not mean.
Yeah, you don't have to be mean. You don't have to be mean, because wherever you go, there you are.
But I was thinking about the Rocky quote when I said that.
Oh, yeah.
What was the coach's name? Rocky's coach.
Oh, Mick?
Mickey? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that what he said? He's like, get angry. Give me...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, get rough. Get tough. Get brutal. Yeah.
Oh, give me that snarl.
Yeah, give me that snarl. That's what the Bible calls a psychological edge. Yeah, and that's okay, too. Go out there and snarl. Again, this idea that we can't be angry. Oh, it drives me up a fucking wall. Or that there has to be justice. Oh, boy.
Yeah, anyway. That too.
We got a lot of fictions out there, folks.
Justice is fake. Feel all of your emotions.
Yes, they're all good. You don't have to be a Jedi. Don't be a Jedi. For the love of shit, don't be a Jedi out there. It's okay to love. It's okay to want. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be passionate. All these things are
having
wonderful.
Attachments.
Yes, attachments are a great thing.
We should talk about this some other time.
Yes, it's a great thing to have attachments.
What's wrong with the Jedi?
Oh, man. I could spend a lot of time on that. All right, we'll have that conversation.
That would make for a great show.
It would. Maybe we'll do that in the next one, but we definitely got to talk about manifestation on the next episode. But we went over 2 hours now, so we are going to wrap this one up, and we will see all of you. Woo! Oh, Ellen, thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me on, love.
you always shed so much light on all these things.
I love shining my light.
Yeah. It's the brightest. We will see all of you on the other side.
Woo!
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah. Wanna be my lover.
Oh, yeah.
Wanna be my lover. Oh, yeah. Wanna be my love.
You're doing so good. So good.
I couldn't hold it together. I'm sorry.
And you just, I've heard you in the car, and I'm amazed you didn't break the glass at times when you sang that.
I'm sorry, I started laughing before I even got it.
All right, we're going to leave it all to their imaginations. Let's go.